And welcome again to Cottage Talk. I'm Russ Goldman, co-host, and with me is Matt Smith. In the fourth episode of the Coaching Corner with Matt Smith, I'll ask Matt his thoughts on the home match for Fulham against Huddersfield Town. Later on, we will discuss potential coaching issues for Fulham that showed up in this match. The show will be looking at Fulham from a coaching perspective, so I'm curious to hear what Matt has to say today. Before we get started, I have to welcome back my co-host to the show. Matt, how you doing, my friend?
I'm doing well, Russ. Good to be back again this week and ready to talk some Fulham.
Listen, I'm looking forward to talking some Fulham with you. Let's not waste any time. Let's start by looking back at the Huddersfield Town match. Just share with me your thoughts about this 1-1 draw for Fulham. Again, they pulled this out at the last kick, basically, the very end of the match to get a point. So just share with me your thoughts about this 1-1 draw.
Well, I mean, at the end of the day, it's actually nice to be on the other end of a last-minute goal to get a point or, be able to do that when so many times it seems like we've been on the losing end or the negative side of that. So it's always nice to every once in a while be on the positive end. Now, in terms of the match as a whole, I think that everybody can agree that it was a pretty drab match. It really wasn't of a whole lot of quality, didn't really have a whole lot of outstanding moments, I think overall it was frustrating to see that we gave up a goal following probably our best portion of the match, to be honest. The 5 or 10 minutes before we conceded was really probably our most attacking. We had two or three chances. Dembele had the header that was well saved by the goalkeeper, and it's frustrating to see you start moving forward positively and you start to get the crowd into things, and then that somehow that just loses your focus and just lost and we'll talk about this in a little bit, but just lost simple defensive tactics and individual defensive tactics in order to concede right after that. So I think we're going to look back at this. I fear that we're going to look back at this game and say that's a game we should win at home against Huddersfield Town, who I think are going to struggle. And from the looks of it, if things keep going the way they are, I think we may be struggling in mid-table as well.
Well, again, Matt, that's the big takeaway I got out of this. If things continue to stay the way that they are, Fulham could struggle to be mid-table. And obviously we have aspirations to be higher than that, but this match showed me the potential to only be mid-table unless changes are made, players are added, and potential moves are made by management, because I could very easily see Fulham ending up 13th to 18th, somewhere around there. I don't think we're going to be in a relegation scrap, but this match just showed how even the league is, and if you don't make the right moves, you could really just be in the second half of the table. That's not where Fulham want to be, Matt.
Right, and I think you're exactly right. I think we're finding out very quickly that this year, even though people have always said that the championship is one of the most competitive leagues in the world, I think it could shape out to this being one of the more competitive years of the championship's history. So it's going to be on a knife's edge, and we've got to be able to do things to be on the right side of the results when we really need to.
I totally agree with that, my friend. All right, let's get into breaking down this match by looking at the different positions. Let's start with goalkeeper. So break down the play of Andy Larnigan, the goalkeeper in this match. Sorry about that, Andy, if you're listening.
I thought he played fine. I really don't think he had a whole lot to do. He was not at fault for the goal, I didn't think. Made a couple of decent saves in the first half and, was pretty efficient with his play. Didn't really spill anything too much in front of him. Kept all of his deflections. When he does parry the ball, he kept him wide enough to not be dangerous in rebounds. And he definitely didn't lose us the match, or definitely didn't do anything to put us on the downside of being down 1-0. But that was just kind of one of those games where you just didn't see a whole lot out of the goalkeepers, and a lot of the play was between box to box, and but when he was called on, the saves that he should make, he did make. But again, I definitely don't put him at fault for the goal that was scored. That was you know, you probably got to share that with some of the people in front of him.
Okay, very good. Very interesting on Fulham goalkeeper Andy Larnigan. And listen, they just so you know, they did bring in another goalkeeper on loan from Cardiff, and he will be backing up as long as Marcus Bettinelli is out. And, you know, again, it's an unfortunate situation with Marcus, but we do now have a backup, Matt.
Yeah. I mean, it's tough to go through all these goalkeepers, and, you know, now – you know, with the unknown of Lewis coming in from Cardiff City, you're holding your breath hoping that Lonergan can stay healthy long enough for Bettinelli to get back so we can have two good goalkeepers again. And, you know, it's some trying times right now all over the field, but especially in goal, it tends to be magnified a little bit when you get just one injury.
Absolutely. All right, let's move on. Let's now break down the play of the fullbacks in this match. What were your thoughts about how they played?
Well, I was very disappointed. I was disappointed with their lack of a role in the attack. I thought Jazz Richards had one of his poor games for us, one of his worst games for us. I think there was the epitome of his performance was late in the first half. He has plenty of space. He's going to play a ball wide to Kaká and just misses him by 5 yards and rolls it out of bounds. And you know, I think that was kind of the epitome of his day, and it just wasn't his day. I mean, that's kind of what you hope, is that it just wasn't his day, and for one reason or another. And but I thought that he was reasonably ineffective, and as ineffective as he was, at least he got forward. Whereas Clyde Boser, it's almost like when our center midfielders get the ball and we're going in the attack, at times they look at that space and it's like they're begging him to get forward, and he is so reluctant, you know, to do that a lot of the time, and so it's tough to. It's tough to sustain an attack when you don't have your fullbacks, you know, being involved in it. But you know, and then defensively, you know, one of his 1v1 error defensively is what led to the goal. You know, he let a guy get past him, and yeah, didn't lead directly to it, but then he won the ball back and made an errant pass, and they won it and came back at us, and that's how they scored. So, you know, if I was grading them in school, I'd probably give them maybe a C-. You know, I didn't think that they had the effect on the game, and therefore we were very more one-dimensional than we have been this year because we didn't have the width to be able to sustain the attack.
Very interesting. And listen, we will be getting back to Kai Voser because I actually had someone email me a topic for us to discuss. It's going to involve him. So when we get to our Q&A section, Matt, we will be talking a little bit more about Voser and also the plays of Pringle and also of Kaká and how his play might be affecting them. Again, that's just a little tease for our discussion a little bit later. That's the reason why I just want to bring it up now, because we are talking about the fullbacks, but we'll be talking about that in depth a little bit later. All right, let's now talk about the play to center backs in this match. And unfortunately, we had the injury to Sean Hutchinson. He went out early in the match. He went down a couple of times, finally had to be taken off. So then Nikolai Bodarov came on for him. But talk about the overall play of the center backs.
Well, I would rate them a little bit higher than the fullbacks in this match. I thought they did okay. The one very glaring gaffe that they made was two people stepped to a ball. Got nutmegged. I think one of them got nutmegged and it just went past the other one. And we got caught way too flat and allowed one little toe poke to beat two players. And that's kind of the cardinal sin of first and second defender. And, you know, so, you know, there is that glaring mistake. And at the end of the day, that's what you're going to be judged on, are the mistakes that actually affect the outcome of the game. But, I mean, I thought they did okay. You know, you fear for Sean Hutchinson, the way he went down, made it look like a concussion. I haven't heard anything necessarily. I'm not sure if you have about it, but the way he went down and kind of slammed the back of his head up against the ground, that's your automatic worry, especially how he got up and was a little bit groggy. So, you know, I mean, the last thing we need is as we don't have as much depth as a center back to begin with, you know, to lose one for a period of time is, you know, is not great. And plus, you would have always liked to have seen him how he was going to bounce back from giving up, from, you know, being sent off and giving up a penalty, you know, a couple games ago. So you would like to see how he was going to bounce back. But I mean, I thought they were okay. I thought that they, you know, we played out of the back, but now at times we got ourselves in trouble. But I think that was more the fullbacks getting us in trouble. But you know, if I had to grade them, I'd probably give them maybe a C+, just dead average. Now, obviously, Dan Byrne also had a hand in the tying goal, so you've got to give him credit for that as well. So, you know, where there's criticism, there's always got to be credit. It also got to be credit given when they do something well. So, you know, but as purely defending center backs, you know, you probably give him about a C+.
Okay, very good. And it's funny you mentioned the injury to Sean Hutchinson. We'll be talking about that a little bit later as well, because again, I want to get your thoughts about how you might have handled the situation, or how a coach looks at a situation like this. Like, again, a head injury, it looked like. Again, I haven't heard much more information on it, but it's a sensitive situation, and, you know, I definitely want to talk to you a little bit more about that later, Matt, because I want to get your thoughts on how you look at that as a coach, how you handle it. It's got to be difficult, but let's move on. Now let's talk about the midfield play for Fulham in this match.
Jamie O'Hara is becoming who you and Emilio and we've talked about before. Jamie O'Hara is becoming Danny Murphy. He is really the driving force, and at times, unfortunately, he's the only driving force as we come forward. I tell you, one person in this game kind of showed it a little bit more and just kind of got me thinking about it a little bit more is really the absence you know, that what we just haven't seen LVC back to where he was last year.
Right.
And you know, right now, Jamie O'Hara is our center midfielder, and LVC, to be honest, with the rare exception of a moment here and a moment there, is virtually anonymous. And you know, that's a little disappointing, and we really need him to get back to the player and the playmaker that he was last year in order to have multiple options in the center midfield. But you know, I'm not sure if teams are keying on him to try to take him out of the match, but Jamie O'Hara seems to be the one that finds the space to receive the easy pass from the backs or from the wings to be able to bring us forward, to switch the point of attack. You know, whereas LVC is pretty quiet so far. You know, and in the attack, when he was so dynamic last year, I just haven't seen it. And so that's troubling on one hand, but the other hand, Jamie O'Hara has the makings of a player of the season for us right now. And you know, he's been excellent. On the wings, I thought Kearney was okay. I thought he was quiet, you know, for long stretches, but almost played at times as a third center midfielder. And Kaka I root for Kaka. I really do. I think he's a very good player. But I just don't see it on a consistent basis from him, and that's a little frustrating because of how dynamic he can be, you know, running at players and using his pace and cutting inside and things like that. But you know, you just haven't seen it as much, and you know, that's a little bit frustrating. And so you wonder, you know, just like you said, we'll talk about later. You wonder where Ben Pringle comes into this, and
right,
you know, is it going to be kind of a platoon situation where they just kind of go game to game and things like that? But you know, the center midfield to me was actually not bad. I thought we actually, if you want to think about positions where you win or lose, I think we won the center midfield game, even though you know, that doesn't necessarily win you the game, obviously. But I thought that we had the better play in the center midfield in terms of completing passes and things like that. I just think that overall, it wasn't a great game for either side, so it's really hard to judge. But you know, if you're grading them, you probably give them a B-. But you know, that hopefully there's better days to come, and hopefully LVC can kind of snap out of this.
I totally agree with you, and that's going to lead me just to give you a little bit of a follow-up question here, because I've heard many fans talk about the play of LVC and Kearney, and that Kearney seems to be better when he's more central. I've talked to Mike Gregg about it. I believe you and I have talked about it as well. Would you consider switching them right now? Would you put possibly LVC on the right? Because, again, right now he's lost in the center. Maybe moving him to the right could open him up a little bit. And then, obviously, moving Kearney back to the middle, maybe then you have a player play into his strengths. I'm curious your thoughts on that.
Yeah, I think that is, that's a definitely a possibility, because I think when LVC started playing wide and getting himself isolated into space, that's really when he was able to show his abilities last year. So I don't think that that's a bad idea at all. I think that with as much as Kearney loves to cut inside, I mean, you wonder, what if we just play him inside and see kind of how he can do in there and be dynamic and things like that. I know I'm using that word a lot right now, but that's really what we need. We have no dynamic players going forward right now, and that's what's really, really troubling. And we have nobody that you look at when they get the ball that makes you go, okay, something might happen here. I think that's what we need, and we need that in the center of the field. And hopefully if we move LVC out wide, that he can kind of get up back on his game, and then you just kind of let it flow from there.
I think it's something that Kit should consider, because Kearney seems like the type of player, that creative central midfielder. Like you said, you have the Danny Murphy role, I think, taken care of now, I can't believe I'm going to say that, with Jamie O'Hara. But you might have that creative central midfielder that I've been starving for since Moussa Dembele went to Tottenham Hotspur, Matt.
Right. No, that's exactly right. And you say you'd like to see Kit look at that option. I think Kit needs to look at every option right now, because I think that he's coaching for his job today. And I think from here on out, he is probably in just about every match, he is coaching for his job. And so I think that it would be foolish of him to not look at every single option possible, through training during the week and things like that. So, the tough thing is that with as many games as we've had, as long as we keep winning the cup and we keep going, that you just don't have those kind of training days. I mean, I assume that they probably trained light on Monday, played Tuesday. They were probably off yesterday, or maybe a light recovery session. And so now they're just getting back into training for Saturday's match. So it's tough when you have this many matches to be able to try those new things in training, because you've also got to save people's legs and have them prepared for the next match. So it is difficult, but I think that he better be looking at everything. Otherwise, he may be on the unemployment line.
It's a very good point, my friend. Very good point. Because again, things aren't working right now. For whatever reason, things aren't clicking. So you should be looking at different ways to open things up, to change things. And hopefully Kit is doing that, because he could potentially be coaching for his job right now. Very good point by you. All right, let's look at the players up front. Let's talk about the strikers, which include Ross McCormack, Moussa Dembele, and Colley Woodrow. Talk about the job they did against Huddersfield Town.
Well, I'll get a little tactical on you, and I hope I don't get too much into the tactics in terms of confusing people. But I actually really like the way that we look with Moussa Dembele, and here's the reason that we're different. We're just a different team when he's on the field, a different attacking team when he's on the field as compared to Matt Smith. And I know it's easy just to sit there and say that, but as you watch the game, Matt Smith is your quintessential target forward. He is going to be basically in one spot. He's going to be high on the last defender, virtually in the center. He's going to use what we call that center channel, which is basically, if you could draw a line on either post all the way down the field, the length of the field, that's basically the center channel. And that's really where he lives. He's going to live in that space. We're going to serve balls long to him, and he's going to try to knock him down. Now, where Moussa Dembele makes us different is that he makes us a more lateral attacking team. And what I mean by that is he's looking to make runs from that center channel laterally into the wider channels, which would almost be kind of like the 18-yard box into about 12 yards from the post. That's where he's looking to make his runs, because he can use his pace. So he's looking to play basically in the gaps between the outside backs and the center backs. And so it makes us a much more lateral attacking team as compared to a linear, serve the ball down the middle of the field, get it knocked down, and then we can kind of go from there. What it's going to take is it's going to take comfort. So we've gone from playing Matt Smith and then bringing Moussa Dembele on to now starting with Moussa. So now you've got to adjust kind of how you play. And so I do think it's going to take a couple more games for us to really get a handle of that and you know, and work with that. But it does make us, it does have the potential of making us a little bit more dangerous because of his pace and his ability to continuously move from side to side. Now with Ross, you know, luckily he got off the spot this week against Sheffield United, but it was another relatively quiet game for him. I do think that he's struggling, and we'll talk about this a little bit, but I do think he's struggling with where he's actually supposed to play. You know, for a striker who's being asked to do basically two or three different things, you know, it's almost like a good restaurant. You'd rather have a restaurant do one thing really, really well as compared to three or four things and do them all kind of average.
Right.
And so that's kind of how I compare that, or can kind of, you know, have a metaphor for that. But and so you'd rather have him say, okay, do what you do best and just do that. And so that's what's kind of confusing, and I think maybe possibly confusing him, or maybe stretching him too thin mentally. As for Colley, he scored the goal, and you know, I don't think that you can say a whole lot else than that. You know, he made the ultimate difference in the game. He got us the point, and you know, I do think he has had an impact coming off the bench, and so that's really good to see that he, even though he's not getting the starts and he's not getting a whole lot of playing time, I feel like when he's come on, he's affected the game in one way or another, and that's really all you're asking for from a substitute striker.
Okay, very good. You know, listen, you got to give the kid credit. He did get the winning goal. He scored some great goals for Fulham last year and obviously this year. You know, again, it's funny. I was just watching the highlights from the Rotherham match last year, and he scored a tremendous goal. And I had to be reminded of some of the goals he scored. And it's good to see Colley score, and I think he's going to be part of the mix, which is not a bad thing. All right, Matt, let's move on. Now let's go to potential coaching issues that I want to go over with you, and then we're going to do a little Q&A with the Fulham supporters. But let's start here again. Let's go back, and let's talk about Sean Hutchinson. I got to be honest with you. When I saw him go down, again, listened to it, but then watched it back, it brought back some really bad memories for me. You know, again, I'm a little super sensitive to the concussion issue. I don't know if this is a concussion issue. We don't know. But when I see a player go down once and then go down again, that's what goes through my mind. I think of a player, you know, that, you know, struggles with that, and then he needs to come off the pitch. I'm glad that he went off the pitch if it was a head injury. Again, we don't know 100% for sure because, again, I haven't heard or read anything to really diagnose what went wrong with Sean Hutchinson. But I want to ask you, as a coach, when you have to take off a player like that, what's going through your mind as a coach handling an injury like that? What do you, how do you handle, you know, the substitution, but also worrying about a player's health?
Well, I think that no matter what level you're coaching at, whether you're coaching 9-year-olds or whether you're coaching professionally, your first job as a coach is player safety. Your job is to make sure your players are safe and stay healthy and things like that. And so, you know, that to me has always been my first job. So, you know, when something like that happens, and it was very scary. I mean, he got undercut and came down very, very hard on the base of his spine, and it was scary for a second, especially with the way he got up. Now, like you said, we can't, you know, it'd be wrong for us to assume that it's a concussion, that it's not something else. But just with the way how groggy he was clearly going to need to be replaced. But you know, in terms of handling that early in the game, you know, you still had 80 minutes to play. You know, so you're really not. Usually, you go into matches saying, okay, if this happens, obviously you can't ever plan for an injury like that in the first 10 minutes. But you know, if we have to go to another center back, who do we go with? You know, and with it being that early in the game, everybody, whether you're a starter or whether you're on the bench, everybody understands the game plan from the get-go. And so, you know, now it's during the course of the game where the game plan may change. But everybody that's going to be on the bench or starting has gone through that week and knows the game plan. So it's really not too bad of a tactical speech that you have to give to that player, because they're already prepared, and the game really hasn't gone on long enough for the game plan to change yet. So I guess that's, if there's an advantage or if there's a plus to it, that's the plus. You know, you certainly worry about something like that. And you know, from a coaching perspective, it's, you know, getting him off the field was you know, was definitely best. But you also have to trust your medical staff. I mean, they brought him off,
right,
and they let him go back on. So, you know, I know Jose doesn't necessarily, down the road, doesn't necessarily trust his medical staff. But, you know, I think that you have to lean on those guys to be professional and to know what's best for the player, because that's really their only worry. Yes, they work, and yes, they wear the Fulham badge, but they're medical staff. They are there for purely for player safety. And so you just,
right,
have to trust that and trust that they're going to make the right judgment call.
No, very, very good take there. And listen, it's a difficult subject to talk about, but I'm glad that you brought this up, that the first thing going through your mind as a coach is player safety. I couldn't agree with you more. That's number one. Listen, you want all your players to play, but their safety is the number one thing. So I couldn't agree with you more. And listen, I want to give credit to the full medical staff. Again, they went out, they evaluated him. They made a call. Fine, they made a call. But then they came out again. Then they took him off, and that was the right thing to do. So again, only they know exactly what was going on there. So you have to trust your medical team. I do trust the full medical team because, again, they did take him off right away. They took him right off. They made the change, and I think that was the right decision. But you know, again, going back to this topic, and it's a topic that is uncomfortable to really discuss at times, but player safety is number one. You know, again, I live here in New England. I saw concussions ruin the career of Taylor Twellman, and you know, and he's been an advocate speaking out about, you know, the threat of concussions, you know, the health risk dealing with concussions. And I'm, you know, call me a little crazy here. I'm just a little sensitive to it. And that's why I wanted to talk to you about this, Matt, because I think it's something that needs to be talked about more.
Yeah, I mean, if you're going to be sensitive about something, this is the one to be sensitive about. And, you know, because it is. And, you know, we've seen, you know, in America, we've seen not only careers end, but lives end, unfortunately. And,
yeah.
You know, and it's just not, at the end of the day, it's just not worth it. And so player safety has to be paramount to everybody on the field. And
yeah,
with the manager being basically in charge of the players on the field, that has to be paramount to them.
Right. And again, let me stress this. Me and you, we're both saying we don't know if this is a concussion. We just saw what had happened, and it just looked like it did involve a potential head injury. So, again, I want to give credit to the medical staff at Fulham for taking care of this player, getting him off the pitch, you know, a second time. You know, they evaluated him the first time, then it came – he went down again. They took him right off, and they did the right thing. And like I said, knock on wood, Sean Hutchinson's okay. And that's, to me, the most important thing. I love Fulham Football Club, but I also care about these players, and I want them to be okay and to be safe. So again, you know, sorry, I'm getting a little emotional here, but I'm very sensitive to this topic. I've been around it, and that's why, you know, again, when you're dealing with injuries of the head, I get a little nervous, so I thought it was time to really talk about this. But, all right, let's move on. Now let's talk about something that me and my co-host have talked about a great deal. Emilio Danelle and I talked about the decision to take off Alex Kaczyniklis in the 74th minute and bring on Colley Woodrow in the Huddersfield Town match. Emilio argued that Kit waited too long to make the change and should have happened sooner since Huddersfield Town scored the goal in the 63rd minute. I argue that maybe Kit should have made the change possibly in the 60th minute to change the game to hopefully win the game. To, you know, and instead of waiting for the other team to get a goal, you be proactive and you make the change even earlier. So where do you stand on this argument?
I think that the pattern, basically the jury is in. I remember last year we, you know, you and I talked about a little bit about, you know, is Kit making changes too late? Does he not use, you know, not using all his substitution? Is that, you know, is that a dangerous game to be playing? And I'm at that point, I made the argument, hey, he's just leaving it to his players to win the game that are on the field. He trusts those guys and that kind of thing. I think the jury is in, though. He doesn't use his substitutions well enough. He doesn't give his substitutions when he uses them enough time to really affect the game. Now, luckily, he did in this, but you wonder what he could have done with an extra 15 minutes on the field. So, you know, I think that my big grief right now with Kit, you know, aside from tactics, you know, pure X's and O's is you know, the timing and who he's bringing on and what time he's bringing subs on. And it's, you know, it's tough to ask somebody on a consistent basis, hey man, here's 10 minutes, go change the game for us in 10 minutes, when it really takes them probably 5 minutes to get into the game anyway. You know, so it's, you know, it's definitely a dangerous game. I think he's got to be more proactive with the substitutions. I think that he should have brought on Colley Woodrow much, much earlier. And, you know, been able to change the game and go win the game, because you just have to get a feel for that game. And you saw that game was just there for the taking. It just needed an extra kick. It just needed an extra kind of boost in the attack to really put pressure on them, because they weren't playing very well. I mean, let's be honest. We weren't playing very well, but neither were they. And so the game was there for the taking. And instead, he was too cautious. He waited for the goal to be scored, and then he put him on. You know, and then and from what I can tell, the goal was scored, and then he went, oh, man, now I've got to change the game. I've got to figure out how to do that. By the time he did that, it was 10 minutes later. And,
exactly.
You know, you don't get those 10 minutes back. So that's where I fall on, is he's got to be much more proactive with his substitutions. I feel like at times there's no plan until he has to create that plan on the fly. And that's really troubling, because that shows a lack of preparedness for every different possible situation. So I think he's got to be more proactive. I think we've got to be more gung-ho. I think that that we've got to go try to win some games, as compared to just see how it goes, and then we'll change on the fly when things happen.
Listen, I couldn't agree with you more. And again, I'm spoiled here. You know, I follow another sport, another team called the New England Patriots, and Bill Belichick is the head coach, and he calls what we're talking about situational football, and that's American football. You know, again, playing the different situations and you know, again, adjusting to what you need to do. This is a situation. You know, again, you're 60 minutes in, and, you know, do you stay the course, or do you try to change the game? Do you try to be more proactive? If this is Bill Belichick, he's more proactive, and he makes a change to try to change the game. Play the situation that's at you. You're playing conservatively. You know, instead of really trying to change the outcome, you're staying the course. And I wish Kit would take some risk. He's way too conservative.
Yeah, I agree, and I think what I think most fans would be, and even fans and people who are, let's face it, making the decisions, you know, in the executive boardroom, but I feel like they would be, all of us would be much more forgiving if he really went for it, but it just didn't work. You know, if he was really proactive with the substitutions, but then, you know, and it didn't work out, he could come back to the media and say, and answer the question, hey, listen, we tried. You know, you can't say that I was, you know, we didn't have any substitutions left. I used all my substitutions. We tried to go attacking. You know, it just didn't work out or whatever. And I think people would be much more forgiving or understanding if that were the case. I think that there's a portion of people or a group of people that see the lack of ambition, maybe, from substitutions as him just not even trying and being scared. And you cannot manage scared. You cannot manage scared to lose a game. You know, you've got to go out and try to win it. And especially in this league, you can't sit back and let the games come to you. You have to go win the game sometimes.
Right, and this is a perfect opportunity where, instead of being proactive, he was being reactive. He was, you know, waiting to see how things would play out. Then something happens. They score a goal. Then you have to react to it. And then again, like you mentioned, it took 10 minutes to make the substitution, which really did change the fortunes for Fulham. They did end up getting a point. But if he came on a little bit earlier, maybe Colley Woodrow makes that extra, you know, difference that, who knows, maybe the goal doesn't come from Huddersfield Town, or maybe they score twice. Who knows? But he did make a difference. The substitution did make a difference, but I think it came way too late, and it was not a proactive decision, and that's what frustrates me from Kit. you know, again, I understand being conservative, but I think he's way too conservative. All right, Matt, let's move on. And I added this to our agenda today because I find this topic very interesting. I want your thoughts on it because I saw this article on FulhamFC.com. It was about Ross McCormack. He talked about the last match and very interesting comments coming from him. I'm going to read the quotes to you, and then I want your reaction from it. So, again, the article is called Up and Running, and it really talks about how Ross McCormack basically changed his position in this match. Here's the quote from Ross. Quote, "I'm buzzing," he told the official website after his brace in the Capital One Cup. "It's similar to last year in that I took a little while to get going, but I had a good chat with the manager on Sunday and just said that when I came to the club, I was a striker, and I think it's best if I can get back to that being in and around the box." Quote, another quote. "So I'm pleased that I was up front in the cup and I got two goals to repay that faith. When I've been playing in the hole in behind strikers, then it's my job to come deep and link the play. But I feel a lot better when I'm further up the pitch and I'm around the box, as the second goal showed. When you've got the chance to come inside and get shots away and stuff, I feel a lot more comfortable." Those are quotes from Fulham striker Ross McCormack. Okay, Matt, what do you make of those comments from him?
Well, I think it's two-sided. I think as a coach, it shouldn't have taken this long to realize where your players are comfortable. I mean, he has been there for a year. It's not like he's just a new transfer. You know, but then on Ross's side, you got to say, why is this conversation happening now? Why did this conversation not happen, you know, in the preseason even? You know, and so you worry about that on both sides. But I think this explains some things because, you know, you and I have talked about in the past couple, you know, the past shows about how he does come deeper and he is a little bit quieter because he is playing off of Matt Smith and things like that. So it makes it sound like, it makes it almost sound like we haven't been playing a 4-4-2, that we've been playing a 4-5-1, and that his job is really to stay up under the striker and things like that.
Right.
I think the reason it makes him more comfortable is because he doesn't have to be everything to everyone. He doesn't have to be the goal scorer, the wide service provider, the one that comes and gets the balls off the center back, the one that provides service into the center forward. That's you know, that's kind of what we were talking about earlier with him about you know, how about you do what you do best and do it great. And
right.
I think what he does is be a menace in and around the box and get shots off and create chances and things like that. And so you hope that, you know, again, you know, something that we, you know, you and I talked about, you don't know who initiated this conversation. So was it Kit or was it Ross? You don't really know. But, you know, with what was said, it sounds like he basically had to come to the point where he had to speak up and say, listen, I'm just not comfortable doing this. I'm more comfortable doing this, and I feel like I'll be more effective. Now, I think that obviously a coach's job is to coach and a manager's job is to manage and get wins and things like that. But I think you've also got to listen to your players. I think a good coach not only can explain and communicate, you know, but can also take, you know, can take opinions on board and things like that and decide, you know, make your own decisions from that. You know, and, you know, and there's two sides of communication. There's talking and there's listening. And so to be able to listen to people is definitely a big skill because I know a lot of managers that will not talk to players about anything in terms of tactics. Their decision is their decision. Nothing's going to affect that. You, as a player, you play, you deal with it. You don't have anything to do with it. I think a good coach can find a happy medium between taking opinions on board from players and finding out kind of where they're more comfortable and what they do best and things like that. And, you know, that's hopefully that's what's going to happen. But what worries me is, why is it taking a month into the season to do that?
Yeah, it's, you know, again, it's a valid point, and I hear what you're saying about McCormack maybe talking to Kit sooner about this because he knows what his strengths and what his weaknesses are. He knows as a player, and I've always said this, Matt, put a player in the best possible position to succeed. His best position is either up front by himself, I think he would be fine, or in, you know, playing a straight 4-4-2. And the fact that he was able to do that in this Capital One Cup match, I think the proof's in the pudding. He scored, he looked more dangerous, he took more shots, And I think he influenced the game more, Matt.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, I was able to listen to it, and it sounded like he was, being a menace to the backs in terms of, defensively and things like that, but then also turning around and being a little bit more of a presence inside the box, which is exactly what he – that's kind of his bread and butter. I see him as that's what he gets paid to do, and he's been asked to do way – a lot more than that, and he just hasn't been comfortable with it.
Okay, very good. Very, very interesting discussion here. All right, Matt, let's move on. I've got a couple of Q&A questions. I'm going to start this with actual email that I got from John Paulson. He actually emailed me 3 days ago, and I want to share this with you. I'm going to go through it because, again, it goes partially to what we've been talking about. I just want to get your thoughts on his email to me, and then we could talk about it. Okay. He has a bone to pick, and it's really about Ben Pringle and Kaka. He says, Ben Pringle and Kaka have gotten a little flack on the show, so I would like to plead their case. Is it coincidence that both of these players are disappearing in games? Is it coincidence that they both play the same position? The first problem is Kai Voser. Ben and Alex are both quality football players, but they are stranded on an island because Voser lacks any offensive confidence in forward play. So please be nice to our poor wingers. They don't have any supply, overlapping runs, or quick 1-2s. The second problem, when they finally get supply from O'Hara or LVC, the defense collapses because they are alone on an island. Bosa doesn't overlap or provide anything besides an outlet, and McCormack isn't showing up front or doing anything really. Again, just understand this email was from 3 days ago. I think that there is a temporary fix. We need Ream to fit. He may not be the answer, but he can't be more of a problem. And give Woodrow or a healthy target and Dembele a chance up front, and you will see Pringle and Kaka playing much better. Pringle isn't fast or strong enough to take on three defenders by himself. He needs to play off others. Kaka has tried to, but with no success. They just need help, that's all. So part of my rambling, I just want to put the pain where the pain belongs, which I suppose is ultimately with Kit. Okay, so basically he's talking about the play of Kaka and Ben Pringle on the left, and that Kai Voser really isn't giving them any support. What are your thoughts about what John Paulson just shared?
Well, I mean, I agree, and kind of what we talked about earlier, just about the fullbacks and with Voser not adding anything into the attack, and I understand kind of where he's coming from, but I've definitely spoke out against that. I do think Pringle's a good player. I do think Kaka's a good player, and I don't put a whole lot of blame on them. I do think that it is a lack of service, and I think that against Cardiff City, I thought Ben Pringle was fantastic. But I think there is an argument to be made that it is about service, but it's also about positioning of that player. Are you in the right spots in order to facilitate that service? And so it's definitely a two-sided thing, but I agree, they're not getting any help. They are not getting any help from their back, and there is no partnership there. We talked about that after the first match, and that
right.
Basically the field is built of partnerships, whether it's two up front or the two wingers or the center midfielders or whatever. But there's also a huge partnership between outside back and outside midfielder. And there's just on that left side, there is just you just don't see it. And like I said, there'd be times where Kaka would be pushed high on the backs like he should be, and there's space for Voser to run into, and it's not until O'Hara looks there and almost stares him down that he finally gets into the space. And so you can say he's being played out of position, you can say whatever you want. I think that Ream would help, but I don't think he's the answer.
Okay.
I think we need a left back, a left winger who can attack, and I just don't think that there's one out there in the time that we have left in the transfer window. But so I worry about that. But I think that there's definitely blame to be shared. I don't think you can say it's all Voser's fault. I don't think you can say that Pringle and Kaka have been the issue. I think the issue has been a team thing, and maybe even just a lack of a partnership, and maybe that just has to grow and. You hope it does, but, I see that Voser's just very uncomfortable attacking, and that's very, very troubling. We've got to find somebody who can do that.
I totally agree, and this is where the injury to Luke Garbutt, I think, has hurt Fulham. You know, again, it's unfortunate that he got injured early. Listen, we haven't had a chance to see what Luke Garbutt's all about, but they haven't had a chance to establish a partnership with either Pringle or Kaká. I'm talking about Luke Garbutt. So we're behind the eight ball there. Even when he comes back, we're behind the eight ball. Because, Matt, if I look on the other side, whether it's, you know, again, say it's Tom Kearney or sometimes Kaká goes on the other side. The one thing that I am noticing, and I don't know if you're noticing the same thing, Jazz Richards, and I know he's not your favorite player, but Jazz Richards is starting to do some of that overlapping and starting to be more offensive, but also go back to his defensive responsibilities. Have you noticed that?
Yeah, he's, I mean, of the two, he is definitely the more attacking, and you see him getting into the attacking third, which, you know, is what you need to have in order to sustain attack and be able to win a ball back in your attacking third, even if you lose it on the attack. You know, that's the tough thing about Vosser is that he's so far back that when they win the ball, when the other team wins the ball, they have space to play into and to start a counterattack. But with Jazz Richards, when he gets forward and kind of closes that space down, it's a little bit more difficult. So it's not just helping out in the attack, but it actually helps win the ball back when, you know, on a counterattack and things like that. So I just wish Jazz Richards would be more effective when he got the ball. You know, I think there's definitely opportunities that he gets, but his passing at times can be suspect. And, you know, I haven't seen him cross the ball too many times. I think they're leaving that job up to Kearney and those guys. But, you know, so I would like him to be a little bit more productive as he gets in the attack. But I guess if you're going to take something positive, if you want to look at it glass half full, then you say, okay, well, at least he's doing step one and he's getting into the space. And now he's got to do something with it.
Exactly. You know, it's not just about getting in the space. It's what you do in that space. You know, I'll put Kaká in that category. You know, Kaká can get into space, Matt, but it's what he does when he gets there that again, he's not following through. He's not setting up other players, and he's also, you know, again, it ends up being, I guess you could say, a lost opportunity when he gets the ball. He's creating the space. He's getting into the space, and then it just seems to go nowhere. You know, it's like a road to nowhere with Kaká, and it's unfortunate because I think he has a good amount of talent. Would you agree with that?
Oh, no, absolutely. I think he's one of the more talented players on our team, but it seems like he gets into spots where he doesn't have an idea of what he wants to do. I think there are times when people are expecting him to do one thing, but he does another. You know, he makes, you know, judgment calls and decisions that are sometimes questionable in terms of when to run at a player and when to cross a ball in. You know, so if he can just get a little bit more consistent with his decision making, I think it'll be a little bit, you'll see that production come because it's a little bit more predictable for his teammates to know what he's going to do in certain situations.
Okay, very good. Very good. Matt, you got time for a couple of questions here.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, let's start with our friend Anthea Evans in New Zealand. If the players start losing cohesion and begin arguing within the team, what can you do to correct it?
Well, if they start arguing, well, really what you do is you lean on your leaders at that point. You really lean on Scott Parker, you know, mostly Ross McCormack, you know, those guys to really right the ship, you know, because at the end of the day, they have to be an extension of the coach in the locker room. And so if what you try to do as a coach is you try to let the players handle that themselves and kind of police themselves. I tell my players this all the time. As soon as it comes onto the field and creates an issue, then it's my problem. If it's something between you guys that, you know, let's say you have an argument, you know, all walking off the field or in the locker room, that's something for the players to handle. Once it steps onto the field and it raises its head, then it's my problem. Then I have to deal with it. And so what you do is you really lean on your players leaders to really help police all that kind of stuff and squash any kind of beef that may be there. But it's something that can be, you know, it can be a team breaker. And, you know, because the worst case scenario is you end up having people taking sides to that argument. So it becomes even bigger. So it could be between two people initially, but then you have somebody who maybe takes the side of somebody else. And then you start getting, you know, two sides and two different factions on the team, and you become kind of disjointed. So you've got to, you know, you've got to have your leaders do it, but you've also got to install just the general core value of togetherness and, hey, we have to respect each other. We're here all for the same reason. We have to understand that. And, yeah, you're going to get frustrated with each other now and again, but we've got to understand that we're all working towards the same goal. And as long as players can kind of keep sight of that, then, it shouldn't get too far out of control.
Okay, very good. Very, very good answer there. Thank you, Anthea, for that question. And listen, I'm now going to go to Trucker Dave because, again, let's take this into consideration. Trucker Dave actually, I believe, wrote this before the last match and the information that we just shared about Ross McCormack. So take that in mind when I read this to you, Matt. Trucker Dave wrote, should the captaincy be taken off of Ross due to his absence this season so far, or is there more captain-like qualities he may be doing off the pitch to warrant it? And honestly, Matt, I think we already have seen that.
Yes, I agree. And I think that really a captain's there are different types of captains. Sometimes you have one that is very vocal, like a Roy Keane was on the field. And then you have others that lead by example and things like that. I think that Ross, there's probably a lot that Ross is doing off the field on the training pitch, in order to be able to warrant that captaincy. I don't think that it's been a lack of player leadership that's been troubling the team. I think it's been a lack of backroom staff leadership that has been troubling the team. And I just wonder, and it seems like, obviously, when your captain has to come to you a month into the season to tell you where, not just a player, your captain, who you probably meet with once a week, has to come in and tell you a month into the season, by the way, Gaffer, I'm not comfortable where I'm playing. That shows a severe lack of communication between the backroom staff and the playing staff. And that's what's really troubling. Should it be taken away from him? I don't think so. I think that's actually going to cause him more trouble than it would be worth.
You know what? It's an interesting discussion because, again, honestly, the article that I just read changed my mind on this because, again, I can now tell that there are things going behind the scenes. Like Trucker Dave said, are the things off the pitch that we're not aware of? Well, we are aware of one of them, Matt. Like I said, he did go to Kit to talk about where he's being played. And again, he's trying to help the team. He's also trying to help himself. But it's more about trying to have the team played the best way it can, and that means him possibly being played in a different way. So I actually think that is a sign of leadership. And like we've talked about before, if you take it away from him, I think that would be a detriment, meaning that I think that we would get less out of him if he did that. I think having him with the captaincy until Scott Parker returns is probably the right move. I think it would be more trouble than it's worth if you took it away from him. That's my opinion. All right, one final question for you, Matt, and this involves some speculation. Matt, what do you think of Fulham being linked with Watford forward Matai Vidra? Do you think he'd be a good fit? Now, again, I remember Vidra from last year. I believe he scored one or possibly multiple goals against Fulham. He looked dangerous. What are your thoughts about him as a striker?
I was actually at the game where he had a hat trick at Craven Cottage, and he was pretty good on the night. I think if you walked away from that night, you would have said, yeah, we need that guy in our front line. He's a very athletic, very very good striker of the ball, can score different types of goals. And I think that that's important in our league to be able to not just be a one-dimensional finisher. I would welcome him. I think that, especially with the, not knowing for sure how long Matt Smith is going to be out, can you have another option off the bench and things like that? So, I think that it's great. I think that if we can manage to land him, then that would be awesome. But, I think that we've got I do think we have bigger fish to fry. I think we've got more specific problems we may need to address first. But you got to score goals, and you got to have people that can score goals. And so, that's why strikers are more expensive than center backs because – that's what pays the bills, is scoring goals. So if you can bring somebody in that can do that and has been proven to be able to do that, then I think you have to definitely look at it.
Okay, very good. And listen, I couldn't agree with you more. I think Fulham, need to concentrate on the back four. You know, again, if they want to bring in another center back, I would be all for that. I think they're going to be okay at left back when Luke Garbutt returns. Maybe, like you said, Matt, maybe a winger. That wouldn't be such a terrible thing. You know, I would be against that. And as a third option, yes, a striker, you know, as a number three thing, I could see Fulham bringing in a striker. But I think that there are other needs, and, God, we only have until Tuesday, my friend, and then it closes. So they've got some work to do. But, my friend, thank you so much for doing this again. This is our fourth episode, and Matt, as I mentioned to you, the show continues to grow. We get bigger and bigger numbers. You're doing a fantastic job. I just enjoy doing this with you.
Well, I do too, man. It's a lot of fun to be able to talk Fulham and talk about the stuff that I love, which is just coaching the game and different kind of tactics and getting in stuff a little bit deeper. So I've had a lot of fun with it. I can't wait to keep doing it.
It's been great. I honestly look forward to doing this show each and every week. I enjoy picking your brain and learning from you about what's going on. You're going deeper. You know, I like that about all the sports I follow. I don't just like the peripheral stuff. I like to go a little bit deeper and really talk about the game within the game. And that's what we do here, and that's what's so much fun. So thank you, Matt, for doing this show with me. We're going to be doing many of these shows. And like I said, it's been a blast to do, and I'm glad that it's been responded so well by the Fulham supporters, because we have so many downloads of it. So obviously people are liking the Coaching Corner with Matt Smith. Before we go, could you do me a favor and just tell everyone how they can reach you on Twitter?
Yeah, I'm at Twitter. My Twitter handle is TNUKEEP, K-E-E-P, the number one. I'll tweet it out on the Cottage Talk. I'll respond to them to the Cottage Talk Twitter feed so everybody can follow me. And I promise to be tweeting a little bit more, especially as the season kind of gets going. I've been kind of dormant for a while, but I'll definitely get back on that. But that's how they can reach me. TNU, keep one, the number one.
Okay, that's great. Well, Matt, again, it's been a pleasure doing this with you. Again, this is our fourth episode. And that's going to do it for the fourth episode of the Coaching Corner with Matt Smith. Here's Matt Smith. I'm Russ Goldman. Thank you, as always, for listening to Cottage Talk. Cheers, Matt, and thank you very much.
Cheers, Russ. Thanks a lot.
Okay.